So, what can be said? What a tumultuous week here. New York City, across the river, New Jersey, Eli Manning. Poor guy was close to crying that he's not going to be starting this Sunday. Understandable. Matt Lauer, Matt, tisk, tisk, tisk. Wow. I thought you were very ethical and moral. Garrison Keillor, they are falling and dropping by the minute. Kim Jong-un, now he's got a ballistic missile that can possibly reach us? All in 3 or 4 days, my friends. This is not even a full week. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is the Progressive Radio Network. Thanks so much for joining me today. Love to hear your feedback. 888-874-8888. Got a great show coming your way. You're going to meet the Hoboken mayor-elect, Ravi Bala. He's a Sikh mayor. He's going to be taking office in January, right across the river in Hoboken. One of my favorite cities in the country. Lived there for many years. I love it. He's an incredible man, very intelligent, well-spoken, and most illustrious and impressive career. We're going to meet him in just a few minutes. But you know what? I want to get right into this, the sexual harassment aspect, because as a guy, you know, in the beginning, you know, I guess what, 3 weeks ago in the new Harvey Weinstein era, I can't say it was even remotely funny. It was a little bit perplexing. I mean, we all know about the power struggle. People in power have this, I guess this, and I'm going to get a psychologist in here. I want to talk more about this. I want to peel back the onion. This ability to, I guess, negotiate or rationalize what they're doing, and whether it's just harassment in general and or sexual harassment. This notion that they're able to basically either shame people, belittle people, take away their power, or to tease them with alleged power that they possibly may attain by fulfilling any request. So I want to read you this. This was just released. So this is the first public statement since Matt Lauer's firing the other day. Quote, "There are no words to express my sorrow and regret for the pain I have caused others by words and actions. To the people I have hurt, I am truly sorry. As I am writing this, I realize the depth of my damage and disappointment I have left behind at home and at NBC. Some of what is being said about me is untrue or mischaracterized, but there is enough truth in these stories to make me feel embarrassed and ashamed. I regret that my shame is now shared by people I cherish dearly. Repairing the damage will take a lot of time and soul searching, and I'm committed to beginning that effort. It is now my full-time job." Yeah, no kidding. "The last 2 days have forced me to take a very hard look at my own troubling flaws." Just the last 2 days? "It's been humbling. I am blessed to be surrounded by people I love. I thank them for their patience and grace," unquote. So Matt Lauer, those are his first public words. I'm interested, a few little minor things that you probably caught, but surrounded by people I love. His wife has actually filed for divorce on 3 separate occasions. It's known that he's been a cheater. As a matter of fact, I don't remember whether it was in London, but she actually flew out there because she didn't trust him during one of the Olympics. So I don't know if she would threaten him by divorce, by saying, if you don't straighten up your act, you know, I'm going to be leaving you, etc. And I guess she would retract that statement and or filing, and then they would continue. I guess that's why he had a lock put on his door that was controlled under his office desk. See, that's kind of perplexing as well. So if you're Matt Lauer, who do you contact? Your, I don't know, the executive director of the show, the CEO of NBC Universal? Yeah, I'd like to have a lock on my door, which I'm sure a lot of people do in offices all over the world. But I want to be able to have a remote control button from underneath my desk that maybe he turned on by his finger, or maybe use another part of his body to turn on. Anyway, that should throw off one kind of alarm. But I guess, you know, I was just speaking to one of my colleagues who said, brought up a valid point that said, You know what? If the guy's bringing in some ratings, which I think they used to. They're doing okay now. The Today Show is not raking in the money like they used to. I think they're a soft number two. They toggle back and forth between one and two position in the morning show. But it's interesting. When you earn $20 to $25 million a year, and you've been doing it for 20 years, yes, I can understand how you could be very confident, maybe overconfident, and maybe treat people maybe not like you did 15 or 10 years ago. But to sexually harass them, I mean, what I'm reading, and I'm sure, you know, and this is no different from probably the other situations that we'll talk about as well. But it's getting more and more disturbing for me as a man. I'm actually really bothered by this and perplexed and disgusted by it as well, because I almost feel like I'm representing a gender that is equally guilty or think like this. And that's not true. And I hope women understand that all men, most men, are not like this. Do I have millions of dollars in my bank account? Okay. Gary pays me well here. Well, all right, I'll skip this. No, I would never dream of treating somebody any differently than how I would want to be treated. So it's just really disturbing when I hear that Matt Lauer, I mean, I think he's a good talent. I think he's a great interviewer, and I'd love to have his job. So anyone who's connected with the Today Show, please, please consider me. I will tell you all my dirty laundry and put it in contract and sign it. And so this way, if anything comes out, you know, we're clean. We're cool, right? I would love to audition for a job. I thought he was good. I didn't think he's tremendous, but it's interesting how you could see in his face that he would pass judgment on a lot of stories. And it's hard when you're doing something for that long to be neutral. Of course, he's doing fake news because that's what Donald Trump says. Well, you know, it's okay that he did all his sexual harassment coming from a guy who likes to grab women from their blank USSY. That doesn't say much, but he's more interested in firing the CEOs at NBC Universal for their production of fake news. Anyway, so the reality is he's wrong. And it's more and more is going to come out about this. And I just don't understand how politicians, people in a lot of different cultural media spotlights feel that they can get away with this. And this is nothing new. It's been happening since probably the camera has been invented. Oh, here's what we can do. You know, I'll take your picture. What would you like to do to get your picture taken? Film, movies, albums, Kesha. Look at Kesha. I mean, she went to court for this. Unfortunately, the outcome was not as she hoped for. And I'm sure a lot of people had hoped for that there'd be more of a guilty finding. But she has her vindication through the song that's doing quite well. Explaining and articulating what exactly happened to her and how this person got away with it. But it's really disturbing that that this exists. And I'm really, really understanding more and more how women must feel. I come from a family with three sisters, a very, very liberated mother, outspoken, successful, divorced, worked multiple jobs, and raised three incredibly successful, smart, outspoken, liberated women who are dedicated to paving roads for women and not ever taking the back seat. So I think when I am around this my whole life, I've always respected women. And I feel bad for women who don't feel that same passion to be as, I can't say devoted or driven, or just realize that they do have the same rights and stick up for yourself. And I know it's easier said than done to say that, okay, if something's done wrong to you, you're wrong, that you always have to speak up. Yes, I understand it's difficult. But in this Me Too era, now is the time. If it's happening at work, if it's happening when you go to a gym, if it's happening, if you went on vacation, wherever it transpired, let's write this, put it out there. let's get people to understand you cannot do this. And I think the real answer to this, the absolute clear answer to this, is more women need to have positions of power. A lot of people are going like, what? Absolutely. Come on. We know this. This has been said for many, many years, decades and decades. They're underpaid. And I want to hear guys stepping forward saying, my boss, she shut the door, or she had the Matt Lauer lock underneath her desk, and she seduced me and I felt violated. And here I am blowing the whistle on her. Let's turn the tables a bit. Let's get it going here. Let's get more women in power. This won't happen. Women know what it's like to be violated, to be abused verbally, physically. They know what it's like to work up the ranks and not get that position, not get that equal pay, not get that title, that equal title. There's so many things that they are experienced with. And this is something that should not be part of it. None of it should be. Playing field should be the same. Garrison Keillor, American author, storyteller, humorist, you know, voice actor, been a radio personality for, oh my God, I don't know, 25 years. Best known as the creator of the Minnesota Public Radio show, A Prairie Home Companion. He was just released yesterday. I mean, Garrison Keillor, listen, it doesn't matter what anybody looks like because it's just funny. We're making good banter here. You got to make good levity here. That's part of my job. That's what I do. I just love to obviously point out things that needed to be pointed out to you, but also having fun with it as well. But Garrison Keillor, come on. Charlie Rose. I mean, this is a guy you think you'd see at home in his wingback chair with his glasses hanging down here, reading a good book and maybe having a little scotch. And giving his wife a kiss on the cheek and just being that rock and being very ethical and just always taking the moral high road. And yet he's walking around buck naked with his junk in his hand. Come on. What is wrong with this world? You know, let's go back to Eli Manning. Yeah, I think, you know, sorry, Eli. That ship has sailed. You're not starting this Sunday, and I apologize for that. But the team is just abysmal, and we'll get over it. But it just kills me to think about this in such a macro way that so many people are being violated. And these are in these positions of, we're thinking about actors, actresses, politicians, the Senate. There's actually something I read very quickly the other day, and I meant to jot it down. There's like I don't want to misspeak, but it's something like the Senate scum list, like the senators who are all like scummy and have acted inappropriately to women. There's a list, and 80% of the guys that are on that list are on that list because of their inappropriate behavior. I mean, go figure that. These are people that are appointed into our government. I mean, they should act with such respect and pride and be grateful that we've put them in these seats. And to go out on some weekend bender or take out a staffer and act inappropriately, it's just uncalled for. I mean, you're serving the public. You're not there to be an egomaniac and to think you have the right to either speak inappropriately, to touch someone inappropriately. It just doesn't happen in this day and age. I mean, I can't imagine being single right now. I would be so, I'm a little freaked out about this being married. Just because, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, being married, or not the being married part, about just being a man and being embarrassed about all these wrongdoings by all these people that, you know, are highly regarded, whether you like to watch them, whether you agree with their politics or anything or all the above, but they're well-regarded, high-respected, well-paid, very well-paid individuals. And to have all this unearth, all this unseated, this moral dilemmas that I guess they struggled with, but now they're not going to struggle because they realize that they're wrong, and it's just really unfathomable, and I just feel that I don't know how we can change it. The nice guys, the average everyday guys, the guys next door, I guess just keep being a good person and realizing that, you know, we're not going to vote for you and put you in the office if you have any flawed characterization. And very quickly, the Democrats are at fault. You know, they have, I'm a Democrat, and we have a double standard because, what's his name? Won't step down. I just got his name, the comedian, Senator Al Franken. And I think that's not right. You can't hold the Republicans to one regard and say, nope, it's different for the Democrats. That's not true. If there is something that was a violation or a law that's broken, I'm sorry, just like Matt Lauer, just like Chara Rose, just like Garrison Keillor, just like Harvey Weinstein, just like all the others that have been revealed and all the others that will be revealed, you have to step down. You have to possibly even do jail time. But we live in an environment and a climate that is just wrong. And for guys out there, you know, everyone's scratching their head sometimes thinking like, oh, my God, did I do something wrong? You know, if you did something wrong, you know, if you are doing something wrong, if you are a manager, a supervisor, a owner of a company, rethink everything you say or do. Hire a consultant. Get a lawyer. Think about, you know, question things that maybe office parties, a Christmas party where there's alcohol involved. I mean, things like that. You have to rethink everything. And I'm not saying this just not to get caught. I'm saying it because it's the right thing to do. Absolutely the right thing to do. It's 16 minutes after the hour in New York City here. My name is Mark Farrell. We're going to go on to a little bit of a lighter topic here. It's the Progressive Radio Network. The show is Insight. I was really, really privileged a few years ago for about 7 years to live in one of my favorite cities in the entire world. I call it the sixth borough of New York City. It's called Hoboken. It's right across the river in Hoboken, New Jersey. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Hoboken Mayor-elect Ravi Bala. Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Congratulations on an incredible win, my friend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry to cut you up, Mayor-elect Bala, but you're going to have to call me back from a landline because I'm sorry we can't air this right now. I'm hearing like every fifth word. So give us a call back. We'll get you back on the air in a few minutes. Let us know, Alex, when he's back on the line. Again, this is Inside the Show. It's Progressive Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. Gary Noel follows me at noon, and he's got an incredible show today. You know what we're going to do right now? We're going to do from the How Cool Is This folder. There are two things. Prince Harry, man, is he lucky. Not only is he a prince, he gets to marry an incredible, gorgeous, well-talented woman, Meghan Markle. Do you know Meghan Markle? She is one of the stars of the show Suits, which is on, I believe, USA. I think it's still running. Anyway, gorgeous woman. And they are engaged. They got engaged just the other day. She has a successful career. But more importantly, she's going to be the first biracial princess. How cool is that? And I'm very happy that Prince Harry has just is very open minded, and the fact that, you know, things are changing. I mean, the hierarchy and the royal aspect and their perception and the world has changed. And I'm glad they're changing with the times. And you know what's really cool about this too? Unfortunately, you know, his mom died way too young, at I think 36 years of age. And Prince Harry, I'm sure, has maybe both of his brother as well, have some diamonds or jewelry from his mother. And he took diamonds from his mother and made his fiancée, Meghan Markle, an engagement ring. That's pretty precious. That's romantic. I even got, you know, suckered into that, going like, oh, my God, what a great guy. What a great guy. So from the How Cool Is This file, congratulations to Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, because that's pretty fantastic. I'd like to welcome back to this show Hoboken Mayor-elect Ravi Bala. Hey, Ravi.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay. Yo, a lot better. So I don't know if you heard me. I'm just going to restate my question. You moved to Hoboken about a decade and a half ago after law school, and you're walking around loving life. What great restaurants, great establishments, eateries, drinkeries, if that's a word. And you saw all the things that were great. But then, of course, some of the things that aren't so great probably have prompted you slowly to realize that you need to go to office.
Yeah, so two things kind of inspired me to run for office as a councilman 8 years ago. One was on a national level. My first experience canvassing or knocking on doors was for then-Senator Barack Obama. When he won in Iowa, I think in late 2007, I shut down my law firm for a week, drove up to New Hampshire with my brother, and knocked on doors in the middle of winter in New Hampshire for the primary there. He eventually, as you know, won. That was inspirational, especially as a person of color, to see him ascend to the highest seat in the country. So I thought if the country is ready for a black president, they should be ready for a sick councilman.
Good for you.
So that was, you know, an inspirational moment on a national level. At the local level, you know, with all the great eateries and drinkeries, as you say, and open space, you know, there was an underbelly of just complete incompetence and mismanagement of the city's finances. I was watching that with my very eyes in terms of watching the council meetings. The budget was overspent by $12 million that year. There was a 70% tax increase.
Incredible. In 1 year, correct?
In 1 year,
wow.
the municipal levy. So the state of New Jersey had actually take over Hoboken. Camden and Hoboken were the only two municipalities that had to be under state control because of the complete incompetence and sometimes actual corruption happening.
Yeah, was that
hall.
Just total misappropriation of funds?
Yeah.
Well, back pockets, I mean, things of that?
we have a structural deficit. You're spending more than you're taking in. It's just, irresponsibility. I was in my mid-30s. My wife and I had, one child. There was a need for, new energy, fresh blood. I was like, yeah, why don't you give it a shot and run for office?
And, it's a great little road test for you is that Dawn Zimmer, she became mayor right when I was there for about a year or so when she became mayor. And I was really, really stoked by her energy, the fact that she's a woman, she's a go-getter. And we should paint the picture for our international listeners that Hoboken is right across the river from New York City. It's kind of a boys club town, correct? Old Italian boys club, old philosophical, things need to stay the way they are because this is how it's been done all these years. And here comes new fresh blood, Dawn Zimmer, and she did a great job changing things, and you were part of her camp.
Yeah, she did a phenomenal job taking over as mayor in a city, as I said, under state fiscal supervision, a lot of patronage in City Hall, kind of the way, Hoboken is in Hudson County, and there is a kind of a old school way to, so to speak, of doing things. They're the people who are entitled and the people who are not. And, it took a lot of time for the mayor to kind of get rid of that and actually hire professionals at City Hall based upon merit and competence, not somebody's brother's cousin's son, for example. At doing that, actually, it's very interesting.
We got most of that, but so what comes on the agenda come January? Do you have some initial items and then some more macro items?
Sure. The macros, I want to make sure that Hoboken is officially designated a fair and welcoming city. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that term, but it's an affirmation, a lawful affirmation that local law enforcement is not going to be in the business of enforcing federal immigration laws.
Excellent.
And that's a priority for me because I think we need to send a message to the community that everyone, even if they're not a citizen, if they're undocumented, if you're living in the United States of America, you are protected by the U.S. Constitution. Mm. You have rights. And people shouldn't be afraid to report a crime, to cooperate with law enforcement. And that's kind of happening right now. So on a macro level, that's what I want to do is project for Hoboken, to the rest of the country that, we are a progressive, welcoming city, no matter what your immigration status, gender, sexual orientation, religion, what have you. So that's in the pipeline. And then go ahead.
And sorry for the interruption. As a Sikh American and civil rights attorney, obviously this is very significant for you.
It is, because, you know, civil rights and social justice is kind of, it's something that runs through the blood in my veins. Mm. It's something that, you know, as somebody who looks different, who was the victim of school bullying in the public schools, you know, I think when I'm now in a position of power, part of my obligation is to try to uplift vulnerable communities, communities that are under assault, other minorities, to make sure that, you know, we can make progress towards greater equality. It's a little blip on the radar in terms of, you know, Hoboken with the rest of the country, but, you know, I want to do my part and set an example through Hoboken for other municipalities, not just New Jersey, but around the country.
It's very true. It is just a little blip, but within that mile square city, as it's dubbed, there's inner city youth. There are gangs, just like any other inner city across the United States. And I remember when I lived there, I unfortunately was the victim of a 15-person assault against just myself. Thankfully, I survived. Yeah, and thankfully, I was proactive, and we started an organization. I'm not sure if it's still in existence, Civilians for Safety. We met with the mayor back then. We met with the police commissioner, and the mayor said, oh, there's no gangs here. And the police commissioner said, of course, it's an inner city. And we did our best just to try to, because my opinion is that you can't have all this gargantuan large amounts of money to come into any setting. And to push the people who are originally longtime residents aside, people of color, and keep pushing them back and back and back without giving them schools, opportunity, after school programs, right, athletic complexes, because things are going to come to a blow.
No, that's a very good point. You know, people say that Hoboken is almost the tale of two cities, mm-hmm, where on the waterfront you've got, you know, we've got Ernest & Young, Jet.com, Newell Brands, all these international corporations coming to buy Class A office space with beautiful views of New York City on the waterfront. And then on the western part of Hoboken, you have our housing authority, where largely Latino and African-American residents live in poverty. You wouldn't know it was the same city. And, you know, one of my priorities as mayor is to try to help the residents in the housing authority and other low-income residents to do two things: have better affordable housing and kind of break that cycle of poverty. And the way you do that is through education, but also creating job opportunities. College is not the best option for all people.
Correct.
So we're trying to bring apprenticeship programs with labor unions.
Fantastic.
You can have a very nice middle class work life and break that cycle of poverty if, you know, you're interested in one of the trades that would make you a good fit to be part of a union and get a prevailing living wage, and break that cycle of poverty. So I'm already, you know, thinking very closely about that. And as you said, as a civil rights attorney, I don't want there to be de facto racial segregation through geography, which is, you know, is a major concern of mine.
Sure, and that's paramount, because I mean the high school graduation rate in Hoboken, I don't know the number, but I know it's quite low, and it's sad.
It is, and the problem is that the more affluent residents, they don't want to integrate with the less affluent ones, and they say, okay, well, you know, the high school, we're just going to go to a different high school or a private school or whatnot. I'm working very closely with the superintendent, having two kids in the public school right now, to make sure, you know, that our goal is that my goal is that Hoboken High School should be the best option once you're in ninth grade. You know, we're not there yet, but, you know, we're trending upwards in terms of, you know, the entire community wanting to stay in the public schools at the early grades. And hopefully that will extend through the middle school and high school. It's not going to happen overnight, but we'll move in the right direction.
Well, you know, I tip my hat to you, Mayor Lakbala, because this is a pet peeve of mine, but there's so many politicians who talk about education reform and their own kids are, I'd say majority of them are in private institutions. And I think it's just telltale symptom of where our educational system lies and where it needs to go. Because, you know, you're serving the public. We need to have these public institutions, you know, up to snuff. And I applaud you for having your children, you know, in the schools of Hoboken and walking the walk.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's a priority. Talk is very cheap. It's much harder to actually do things, and you're never going to make everyone happy, but you've got to be true yourself. You know, I have a conscience, and I'm here. You know, we're in this world one time, and, you know, what you'd like to do is try to make a positive impact on other people's lives, and I'm very humbled to have the opportunity to try to make a difference and try to help others in need.
It seems that the overall pedestrian aspect of Hoboken has become much safer in the last, 5-7 years. I mean, the bike lanes and the crosswalks and the stop signs. I mean, I'm visually impaired and I can see everything. So it must be really good for people who don't have bad vision.
Yeah, it's much better. There's still, you know, pedestrian safety. Hoboken being a very walkable city is a large priority. We are on Washington Street. I really like this. It's controversial, but I think it's going to work out. We are placing what's called curb bump outs at each intersection, which is literally having the curb sort of circle in or expand into the road. And what it does is that it takes away that illegal parking spot at the corner, which if somebody's parked there, it creates a blind spot for a car trying
Absolutely.
To make a right turn.
Yeah.
So it's dangerous for pedestrians to have that car illegally parked. The curb bump out eliminates that space. And then number two, especially for with moms with strollers or seniors, the walking distance on Washington Street in particular is difficult sometimes. So the curb bump out really shortens that walking distance. And it slows traffic, which is, you know, that's not a bad thing, especially for pedestrians.
Yeah, it makes people making a right turn have to slow down a little bit more because, you know, they can't hug the curb as much as they would primarily or before. So, of course, flooding is always an issue. Open spaces, and these are things that you've been vital on working on, and I imagine they continue, correct?
Absolutely. Mayor Zimmer has done a phenomenal job on parks and open space. We've acquired no less than 7 acres of parkland in 3 portions of the western part of the city. The acquisition process is complete, except for the southwest. We're looking to acquire at least another acre. And now the challenge is the development of that park space. But, you know, the goal is to make sure that every resident in Hoboken has a park they can enjoy within a couple blocks of where they live. That's not the case now, but Mayor Zimmer has set the foundation for that to come to fruition in the coming years. And as mayor, I intend to make Hoboken a more kind of park-friendly community where you actually have that open space in the city.
My guess is Mayor-elect Ravi Bala of Hoboken, who's going to be taking the office in January. Talk about the unfortunate incident that your rights were violated, civil rights, when you were visiting one of your clients in jail several years ago, because this adds more proof. And you mentioned before, of course, you were bullied for looking different and sounding different, eating different food. And when I speak at schools and colleges, I tell people how lucky you are to be surrounded by people who are different, and you need to embrace that. But of course, not everybody understands that philosophy. But tell me briefly about what happened to you and how that impacted what you do and how you put that into practice on a daily basis.
Sure. I was visiting the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn as in my capacity as an attorney. It was a routine client visit. And when I got to the security clearance section, they had said that I would have to remove my turban as a condition of getting access to my client. I made it clear that that's, first of all, a violation of my First Amendment right to practice my religion freely, because this would be a violation of my religious practice. It's a Fourth Amendment invasion of privacy. And it's a you're either actually violating my client's constitutional right to access to counsel.
They denied access. I filed a complaint with the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, and the end result was a nationwide policy change with the Bureau of Prisons, where they no longer require that as a condition of visiting the jail. So that was an example of where people do not always exercise logic or rationality in applying policies, whether it's religious accommodation laws in the workplace or, you know, profiling issues or, you know, this instance. It's a problem nationwide. It still exists. And, you know, that was one instance where I was able to affect change, not just for, you know, my own benefit, but on a bit more of a broader level as well.
Well, that's a great accomplishment. I mean, born and raised in New Jersey. Are your parents from the States, or are they from India?
They're from India. My father immigrated to the U.S. in the, I think, mid-60s to study and to do his PhD over at Penn State University.
Great. And I'm sure they're no stranger to not equal treatment as my mother-in-law and father-in-law, who are Sikhs from India. And yes, and my kids are half Sikh, half Irish. We call them Indian, Irish and Indian. And so I'm no stranger to, unfortunately, like one of my father-in-law is older and we want them to downsize, but he's afraid to move to new development or environment where he will not be treated where everyone knows him. And that's a sad state in this day and age. But more importantly, with these issues that you've experienced, I mean, certainly you're human. You have your weak moments where, you know, you're a lawyer, you're accomplished, you're educated, and you think that more people think like you and like us, but it's not the case all the time, especially in this Trump era that we live in. But it fuels you at the same time to realize there's so much more work to be done.
Absolutely. I still think about the example of Thurgood Marshall. I don't know if you know the story, but you know, he was in at the Supreme Court building as in his capacity as a justice in the Supreme Court, and in the elevator, some tourist thought he was the attendant for the elevator. So they, but he was, you know, one of the top jurists in the country. So there is there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of public education. You know, I want to use this platform as the mayor-elect and future mayor of Hoboken, first and foremost, to elevate Hoboken's profile for the benefit of our great city, to make it even greater. That's what I was elected to do. But at the same time, I want to use it as an opportunity to educate the public about who the Sikhs are, what our community is about. You know, our values as Sikhs are exactly in sync with our values as Americans, whether it's, you know, equality, social justice. You know, that is what our religion is about. That's how it was formed. So there's nothing inconsistent with being an American and being an adherent to the Sikh faith.
And I'll add one more adjective that, of course, you would not throw in there because you are a humble people. I've never met more of a population, Sikh people, who are more generous and humble in my life.
Except the Irish.
That's because we're imbibing. Well, that's good. You got to have a sense of humor. Even a couple of weeks before the election, there were some propagandatives going around about why would we elect the terrorists. I mean, all this stuff is ridiculous. I won't even give it any more time. But I mean, there are people out there. We have to change the thinking process. And what better way to bring people together, the people who are fluent in Hoboken, the middle class people, the people who are in the projects, to realize that, yes, we can cohabitate. There is enough resources here. There's some land.
Right.
Let's get something together. Let's be proactive. There's more than enough brilliant mind power in that town to do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I like to say, you know, with respect to Hoboken, as Sinatra would say, the best is yet to come.
Yeah.
There's so much untapped potential in Hoboken.
Huge.
You know, our greatest resource, or one of our greatest resources, is the residents and the intellectual capital we have that's been untapped here in Hoboken. So Yeah, I really think our best days are well ahead of us. And Mayor Zimmer has laid the foundation for, you know, Hoboken to, you know, really be on the map as a world-class city in the coming years.
Absolutely. Now, I thought about this on the way in this morning, not my usual 7-minute commute, which I cherish and long for when I used to take the path from Hoboken into New York City. It's a much longer commute now. So I was thinking about, you know, your accomplishments and where this may lead you. And I want to leave this little feather in your cap here, that possibly a little nugget that you can tuck away, that maybe in 4 years after you do such a bang up job in Hoboken, you can come across the river. You can still live in Hoboken, come across the river, and run for New York City mayor, my friend. It's next. It's next. You don't have to respond. Just put it, tuck it away. Tuck it away. Sure. Mayor-elect Ravi Bala, thank you so much for your time. And we look forward to continued greatness happening in Hoboken. And we thank you for being courageous and smart enough and brave enough to run and to ascertain a very pivotal seat.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sasrikal. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. If you have any input, 888-874-888, or make that 8888. If I can read this damn sign, I'd be able to read the numbers correctly. So here's something pretty cool. Check this out. So in New York City for years, you weren't able to dance unless you had a cabaret license. Yes, if you wanted to dance in a bar, in a club, of course you could dance because they had cabaret licenses. And this goes back to the 20s, 1920s. And it started during a jazz explosion because politicians, get this, did not want black and white folks mixing. Because jazz was very, when its origins, very much a black audience attraction. And of course, that changed. But to do this, they said, okay, we're going to have facilities and bars that have to have a cabaret license. So if you don't have a cabaret license, you cannot dance. And people would get fined and ticketed and sometimes closed down. But that all has changed, thankfully, because it's an outdated, archaic theory that I believe Giuliani was the first mayor to start saying, okay, you know what, guys? They probably said, listen, just don't enforce this. And I remember being a bartender on the Upper East Side at the Victory Cafe and also Richter's, two of my favorite old haunts. And yeah, we won't go there. I do remember some things vaguely, but certainly dancing on a bar and dancing all over the place. And sometimes once in a while, a cop would come in and the owner would come over and say, listen, you got to shut the music down for a few minutes because you're not allowed to dance. And he'd bring up this cabaret license act. And I'm just like, are you serious in this day and age? But anyway, it's going by the wayside. Our current mayor has said, no, 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 we're going to do away with it. So I believe in the next 30 or 60 days, New York cabaret license, been around since the 1920s during a jazz explosion, is going by the wayside, which is awesome. So even though in the tri-state area, the Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center was lit yesterday, or lighted, hard to believe, 75 feet tall, and it feels like it's not even autumn, it's 60 degrees yesterday in New York City, that people do get depressed, certainly in the summer, longer days, you know, no less daylight, etc. And there was an interesting study at Northwestern on light therapy, also known as kind of like a happy box. You ever go into someone's office and you see like a little box and you're like, oh, what is that? They call it a happy box, but it's based on light therapy. And it was a small study. I think there's only about 60 or 80 people. And I don't have all the notes in front of me for that. So don't quote me. But the reality is they had two sample groups, one with the light therapy, whichever the actual type of light it is, I'm not sure. And then one with a type of light that's not as healthy. It's like a placebo light, if you can consider that. And they did this study over several weeks. And the people who did have light therapy or the happy box did feel significantly better. But this does not help the people who have bipolar. It helped the manic part, but not the depressive part, which is very interesting. And also that's drugs as in general with SSRIs, like depression, drugs that help depression, and also bipolar disorder, that they're really good at helping the manic part, the really high, the elation, the untenable energy, but the lows are still very much the lows. But overall, light therapy was proven very, very effective in this Northwestern study. So we all get them, especially, you know, after the holidays pass, January arrives, and all of a sudden you're faced with your Visa bill. Yeah, your Visa bill. That's always something that gets you really depressed, right? No kidding. So consider that, because light therapy and depression, you know, if that could be it, I mean, you don't even have to make a copay, right? I mean, the fact is you can just buy this probably over Amazon for just, a couple of dollars and really make it work. And so I know a lot of people who do get seasonal depression, and I can't say I'm immune to it because, you know, when it's really cold out, and I'm sure we're going to be faced with some colder weather. I mean, today it's, I think, mid-40s, but still on the last day of November, which is kind of hard to fathom itself. Tomorrow's December 1st, and next thing you know, it's 2018. Another number it's hard to fathom that it will be here. But around February, first, second week of February is very, I don't know, it's blue. You get blue, especially if we get kind of inundated and hammered and pummeled with snow. And that brings me to my next topic. There is an event called Survivor Day from that's been known for a while, but the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has a thing called Survivor Day. And Survivor Day, you would think that means that people who tried to take their lives but were unsuccessful. Well, that does happen, certainly. But Survivor Day is for the people who have lost somebody. People who have lost somebody that have died by suicide. So the family members, whether it's their son, daughter, fiance, husband, wife, uncle, sister, whatever the case may be. So it's been around for many, many years. I've been part of this for a while. And it's always the last Saturday before Thanksgiving. And I was asked to speak at a college, part of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention Survivor Day. I was asked to give a 45-minute keynote, and I was honored to. This is months ago. And then I got a phone call saying, hey, listen, we may have a change of plans. We want you to speak, but the reality is we have so many people who have just lost somebody relatively new within like 3-4 weeks. I mean, when you lose somebody by suicide, and it's only been a couple of weeks, I mean, that's people are very fragile. The feelings are so tumultuous. I mean, it's just really hard. I mean, to put your foot on the floor in the morning is a huge accomplishment. Anyway, so I understood that. So what they did is they said, can you come in at the end of the day? This is, a 5-hour day. And it actually worked out well because I had some other arrangements that kind of surfaced, and it worked out well, and I could do all those things. So I came back at the end of the day. So pictures, you walk into kind of a conference setting, the end of the day. Now, people have been crying, they've been yelling, they've been, you know, asking questions in breakout groups. And, you know, there's a lot of emotional turmoil in that day. And here comes me. I'm trying to act out, obviously not act all bubbly and everything like my usual effervescent self. Be like, hey, what's up, everybody? Let's shine. Time to wake up. Anyway, so I had a message that they said the day was about hope. So I crafted my talk around hope. And I started out by something totally different. I found a chair, a stool, like a bar stool, in the cafeteria, a snack area. I brought it up to the stage beforehand. I set it aside. I did something just so very different from my normal talks. Usually I'm in the audience. I'm all over the place, high energy. Put it right smack dab in the middle of the stage. Sat down. Didn't talk for a few seconds. I wanted people to really just kind of like, I don't know, kind of clear their mind and kind of tune into what I was about to say. And basically, I said, there are no words to describe what you've experienced. Abysmal, horrific, apocalyptic. None of these words explain or can encapsulate what you've experienced in the last 6 months, 5 years, 10 years, however long it's been since you lost somebody. And went in to talk about my experience, what worked for me, what didn't work for me. I talked about how I was a very problematic drinker up to that point, and even after that point, but up to that point, and I was really frightened about going to a bar, opening that bottle, ordering that drink, and I stayed clear of it for a while. Yeah, I had a drink or two, but not like the point I would imbibe till I would kind of pass out, which was my normal, actions back then, because I was afraid that what am I going to feel like? So my talk went on many levels about our feelings, how to avoid possibly those feelings sometimes when you have to be at work, or what you need to do to address these, the importance of therapy, the importance of taking care of your body, your mind, the importance of talking about it or not talking about it, the importance of crying, of screaming, of being behind the wheel of your car and hitting your steering wheel and turning up the radio. And I said, you won't get pulled over by doing that. And if it does, you can just say to the officer, hey, I'm not texting. I'm beating the shit out of my steering wheel, but I'm not texting. You can't, give me a ticket for anger mismanagement of my steering wheel. So there are a lot of different points I tried to make these people who are so vulnerable, like these raw onion that have just lost somebody in, weeks time. I talked about how I was in their seat 3 weeks after my brother took his life 25 years ago. And that was the best thing that ever happened to us. And I remember sitting in that chair, looking around the room going, wow, I have all these crazy thoughts in my mind. And I think I'm losing my mind. But I realize I'm in great company. I'm in like-minded company because everyone else is having the same or very similar thoughts. And that was really, really healing for me. That was cathartic. And I think for these people, if they hadn't heard that up to that point before I spoke to them in the breakout sessions, that they felt a great deal of relief. I hope so, because there's nothing worse than like having a scary thought or an impression, a concept after a major loss, and thinking that possibly that it's just so scary or, unfathomable that you don't want to share it with anybody. And next thing you know, you hear the echoes across the room from other people who are experiencing very similar things. And you're like, oh my God, Jesus Christ, thank you. I'm not losing my mind. So these are normal circumstances. These are normal events that people go through. These are normal things, the process of losing somebody to suicide that you have to go through, just like the normal stages of grief. But multiply that times, 1,000, because, it's so much more horrific. The questions, the whys, the why not, so the guilt, the survivor guilt alone. So I spoke about all these different important, significant aspects that people feel, and sometimes that people actually don't feel. They turn them off and they go to opioids, they go to alcohol, they go to getting depressed because they don't and cannot deal with the fact that they are emotionally breaking down. So some people, I don't have this capability, some people, and I know a lot of people do, can just shut that vault door. Boom. I've seen it. It's crazy. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. I've actually been speaking to people face to face, having a conversation with them about something that's so heavy about them, most likely. And all of a sudden, like a switch just gets flipped and they just change immediately, stop on a dime and either change the topic or their philosophy or something changes. And it's just like, wow, it is craziest thing you've ever witnessed. I certainly have witnessed in my life in terms of a interpersonal conversation, interaction. And maybe you've experienced something like that. And it can be on different levels. A lot of it has to do with personal relationships, because suicide is all about personal relationships. It's all about, you know, the loss. It's all about the connection or the lack of that allows people, I shouldn't say allows people, that possibly is a variable in the fact that they're too depressed, you know, or not healthy. So the takeaway, I said to all the attendees when I was up on stage, is that, yeah, there are no words to describe what you've experienced, but we all have to, what's the word I use? It was a crucial word. I can't believe I can't forget it right now. Oh my God. We all have to clutch. Maybe clutch was the word. We all have to clutch hope. Hope every day that you can be able to put your foot down on the floor, go to work, smile, even fake a smile. Every day that you can think about the person you lost, cry about them, scream about them, smile about them, look at their picture, and maybe 6 months down the road and not break down, and maybe help somebody else, or notice that somebody else is in crisis. Any one of those days needs to be fueled by hope. Hope that this will never happen in your life again. Hope this you'll never experience this. And hope that if you ever do experience depression, anxiety, any mental health aspect, I should say, that you know what's out there, what is available for you to get help. So anyway, Survivor Day, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, happens every year, the last Saturday before Thanksgiving. So it was an effective day. So I want to say hello to a very, very special person, Daljeet Singh. A new chapter of your life is beginning. I applaud you. I know you're going to welcome it with open arms. You're going to continue to spread that huge, kind heart of yours with that loving nature and that willingness to learn more, do more, experience more with your loving husband and great family that you are. Very, very proud of you. Congratulations on the next umpteen thousand years of your life. So if you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation about overcoming adversity and any other many topics that I cover, please, please, please check out my website, markfarrellmotivation.com. That's markfarrellmotivation.com. Thanks to the cast and crew right here at the Progressive Radio Network. Gary Noel's next. Have a great day.